On today's show, we're tackling a big question. Is lead generation actually dead? And some other big questions in the marketing world today. I'm your co-host, Kip Bodner, CMO at HubSpot. I'm joined as always by my co-host, Kieran Flanagan, who's the CMO over at Zapier. This is Marketing Against the Grain. Let's get into today's show. All right, we're doing a slightly different show today, and we're doing a mailbag where we've got questions from folks in the community. And if you are watching on YouTube, or if you're listening to us wherever you get your podcasts, you may not know that we have a community over on connect.com. We've got a great group of communities. When we started the podcast, Kieran, one of the things that we had the hardest time with was feedback.
Right.
We were like, are we talking to ourselves and is anybody listening? And so we wanted to get a community together so we get real feedback from people listening to the show so we could make the show better.
Yeah, I think that is always the hardest part of doing a podcast is you're here in your room talking about things. You know people are listening because we can see it in the stats, but it's hard to like, you know, really communicate with them. I think one of the cool things that we did is we spoke at the main stage of Inbound this year, and that's when we got to meet some listeners. But it's kind of cool, the connect.com community allows us to interact with them. I was in there over the weekend putting in some cool prompts. So I appreciate all of the people who give us such great feedback, such good questions that we're going to go through and are interested in cool prompts.
Yeah, I think for a while we felt like the numbers were like, are these just bots listening to our podcast? Because
right.
when you don't get feedback, you're just like, oh gosh. What do I actually need to do to make this thing better?
Yeah, exactly. And you don't get it so much through the user reviews and things like that. So we have a stellar episode of cool marketing questions that we can actually start to go through. I think we can help people.
All right, cool. I'm going to kick us off with question one, Kieran. Comes into us from a listener, Evelyn Costa. And it says, in an increasingly digital AI world, how can a small business strike the balance between online and offline marketing strategies to create a cohesive brand experience for their customers? What's your take?
What would a small business do offline? What would you want to do offline?
No, but make the point.
One of the things I potentially could see you do as a small business is small community meetups, something like that to like actually interact with customers. Or there was a startup I spoke to once. You know, when I do pre-seed and seed, I always ask, how did you get your first 1,000 customers or whatever number of customers? And pre-seed, how do you expect to get that number? And there was this company and they were horizontal SaaS product and they were like very small pre-seed, I think maybe 10, 15 people. But I actually thought they could be a real product at some point. Like they had some of the right things in place. And I was like, how are you getting customers today? And how do you expect to get your first X number of customers to get you to your seed round? And they were going to like offices and actually doing like pizza meetups. So they were going into the office to these kind of companies and just buying people pizza, hanging out, demoing the product, showing how it can make their lives better. And it was really working for them. Like people loved the fact that they came around, visited them. It's obviously not a very scale-up tactic, but really good for a small startup. And so there are some viable ways that you can use offline to accelerate your business or grow your business, because I think so many people don't do it because we just veer towards digital. We start in digital. When you're a really small business, do I really care that there's a cohesive brand experience? No. I really just care that I can like have one or two metrics that I truly care about and do anything I can to move those metrics. I don't really care about cohesion of the brand. I only care that I can move the needle on like whatever metric is the most important metric to me at that time. And if there's something offline that can do that, then I double down on that. If there's something online to do that, I double down on that. I don't really think too much like, are those things cohesive in terms of like the way people experience my brand? I don't think that's the thing you should care about.
Yeah, a couple things I've jumped in there with, Kieran. One, it's like brand cohesion is directly correlated to brand equity. If you have a lot of brand equity, you should care about brand cohesion. If you don't have a lot of brand equity, you're just getting started, you shouldn't.
Right.
Your job is to build that equity by accomplishing great results, delivering a ton of great value for your customers, right? And I think that's super important. The other side of this is what you're basically saying is online is about scale. And if you're a small business, you need to spend 80, 90% of your time on scale. And that would be creating content, doing marketing automation. You're going to be doing content creation of some sort. You're going to be doing some type of automated marketing. You're going to be doing some type of online-led sales motion. That's what you're going to be focused on. And that offline motion, I think, is just like you're saying, Kieran. It's to get good feedback, or if there are key points in the customer journey that you know are outsized important and you can have some offline component to really place emphasis there. You know, if you serve a given region and you can actually visit customers a month into them being a customer for like an hour, like that's very interesting. And that might be the only offline thing you would consider doing, right?
Yeah. Anytime you can do things that you can hang out with customers is worth doing. Like spending time with customers is number one on your list. Just as a small business, it's hard to do all the things. It's definitely hard to like go do offline things because they take up so much time. I'll tell you, like when we first launched HubSpot in EMEA, like Europe, when HubSpot were still like relatively small, like 300 people, obviously at this person, that's going to be a large business for most people. But we did do a bunch of events in that first 12 to 18 months to go meet customers, to go actually interact in all these different regions, because it was the best way to go in and figure out like how these regions were different from each other, how they experienced HubSpot, how they thought of HubSpot. I think I did about like 30 events within the first year. Not something I ever want to repeat again, but was like fun at the time. But the reason we did that is because we were brand new to Europe and we just wanted to like meet customers, right? Talk to customers. And so I think that is like the number one thing is a good use of time offline.
In the absence of a lot of data, anecdotes are really important.
Right.
And anecdotes are easier to get in person.
Exactly. People tell you the realness.
And so when the story you just told, Kieran, you were able to get a bunch of anecdotes on those events that could inform decisions in the absence of a lot of data.
Right. People tell you the real when you're in person, over dinner, over lunch. So the second question I would love to spend some time on, again, comes from Evelyn, and it's, is lead gen campaigns dead? And this is somewhat broad, so it could mean a bunch of different things, but let me talk a little bit about something that I do think is happening, which is, you know, you and I have had this first principle of marketing really is just a game of value creation. And if you can create 10x the value of competitors and create things and put them in market that people would pay for, then you likely will win. What I think is happening and maybe is related to this question is the line of what's free is constantly moving.
Yes.
That line is constantly moving. And so people's expectations around what they get for free is constantly moving. So all my time spent in AI. So obviously the entire Easter weekend spent on AI. All right. So one of the places I was looking at in AI, I think you and I are WhatsApping about it, is I sent you this person had basically scraped the entirety of Fiverr and then used Claude 3 to categorize all the services into like categories. Like what are the top categories of services that Fiverr offer, right? And there was another site I went to, which is just a bunch of AI agents. Again, very much like a Fiverr, but a bunch of AI agents you just click on and they'll do a task for you. And one of those tasks was creating lead gen magnets, right? It just, you can put in any topic and it would create a lead gen magnet. Lead gen magnet for people listening is the thing the person wants to give your details for and download. The reason you call them magnets is because that's how you create demand for your business, right? Someone will fill out a form to get that lead magnet. And, you know, HubSpot really, you know, started the trend in B2B of offering lead magnets to create demand for their business, whether that's an ebook, a template, course. And over time, we would continue to increase the value of those things because again, the free line keeps moving. So now we're at a state where it's like a click of a button to create these things, right? Like we had incredible writers and we put a lot of time into figuring out how to create valuable lead magnets back then. Today, as a small business, like any solopreneur or small business or business of any size can click on an AI agent. And because it's informational content, the template, the course, the ebook, and I'm going to give our listeners a free course very soon, completely created by AI to show how it works. Boy, the free line has moved a lot, right?
I don't know where the free line is, my friend.
You know the crazy thing is, Kip? Let me tell you this crazy thing, just so people realize how crazy this is going to get. I wanted to fine-tune a model. I wanted to teach myself how to fine-tune Llama. And I went into Google and I was Googling things. I had a very specific set of tasks, right? Fine-tune the model, do this, do this, do this. I wanted to learn how to do that. And I went into YouTube and I went on to Google and I was searching for the exact course of the things that I wanted to do and learn. And I was like, geez, I can't find the ideal thing. And I would pay for this, right? I was looking to pay for it.
Totally.
So I basically created the outline and had Claude 3 create the course for me. And it's awesome. It's personalized to me. I'm at chapter 2. I'm going through it. I fine-tuned some stuff in Llama. It's running on my laptop. Shit. What do you do to create lead gen campaigns when
you do that for people because people don't know what to do, what you just did right there.
When users know how to do this, I can create a course for me better than you can create it for me. So why would I ever download your course, right? Like I went on a huge tangent there. I let you jump in, but I've been thinking about this a lot.
First of all, if you think lead gen is dead, your business is probably dead. This is what I would tell anybody, right? You always have to have a repeatable and programmatic way to drive demand for your business. What Kieran is saying is that how you drive demand is always rooted in value creation. and the value you create for your prospects, and the line for what is valuable has changed a lot and is changing faster and faster. And especially with AI, keeps changing incredibly quickly, right? And so there is a lot of inherent risk in that, but also you have to be a real student of what's going on and what's valuable. And there's still, I believe, a ton of value to offer out in the world, but lead gen is not dead.
Your argument is that your business is dead if you can't programmatically generate leads, but how do you programmatically generate leads? Like, what will be valuable in a world where you can create your own personal lead magnets?
Yeah. So even though that the free line is moving, the thing that has always worked here, and I think for you and I, is we go out there and we look and see what our prospects are paying money for.
Right.
We list out everything they're paying money for today. And then we say, is there a way we could give that to them for free and have the economics of that work? And that exercise is incredibly valuable. You and I, we jammed a little bit this weekend on some ideas around that because it's like always a very valuable thing to do. And normally what you say is like, oh, these people are paying for this course, so I'm going to create this course for them. Or these people are paying for this type of tool, so I'm going to give this tool to them. Those are the things that while the free line is going to move, people are always going to be paying for something. You just have to continue to stay agile every quarter, every year around what you can give them that is of real value.
Right.
Do you agree with that?
I agree. I think people will always pay. Not everyone is going to do the thing that I would be able to do, go create a custom course for me. So people pay for the ease of access. And it's why like Udemy is so successful, right? Like no one actually takes any of those courses, but they don't want to go and do the work to get that knowledge themselves. And so I agree. I think there's always going to be things that people pay for, but you're going to have to be a really creative and very good marketer to be able to generate lead gen campaigns that stand out from the crowd when you have AI able to do kind of like the bottom 80% of things that we used to do.
I totally agree. All right. Before we get to my next question, Kieran, I got two quotes for you that blew my mind over the weekend that I wanted to just share with you, get your reflection. You ready for quote number one?
Yes.
This one's a real mind bender. You sure you're ready?
Hit me.
Okay. The magic that you've been seeking is in the work that you've been avoiding.
The magic that you've been seeking is in the work that you have been avoiding.
Yeah.
Tell me what you take from that, because if I think about the things that I avoid, I don't know if there's magic in there.
Well, I think there are two interpretations of this. One that is interpersonal, which is like, oh, I'm avoiding like some type of emotion, right, some type of trauma, some type of something negative. And I want a different life, and I can't get to that different life until I deal with that. I also think there's like a work interpretation of it, which is like, well, I want this promotion. I want this thing. I want to start this business, but I can't do it until I do this hard thing
Get the skills
and wisdom to do it. And both of those things work.
Right.
And I think it's, to me, it is like everybody spends too much time in the comfort of what they know.
Right.
It was like my interpretation of it.
I'm not a believer in like large, complex productivity lessons. Like I think actually there's only a small number of things you need to do and you can be much more productive. I think one of the ones that is really simplistic and does work really well is like have one thing that you truly try to do per day rather than having a big to-do list and make it the hardest thing. Not even the hardest thing, the most significant thing.
Yes.
Right. I look across my list for the Monday and I say, you know, I'm only going to like have one thing in my to-do list. And if I get that done, everything else is a bonus. What's the most significant thing? And that to me is like one of the best productivity tips you can have.
Yeah. Doing something significant every day and starting with it.
Yeah. Not starting with your email or something like
that. There's a way to kind of make some of that magic happen. There's an episode of the Founders Podcast that I keep re-listening to over and over again. I don't know why. This particular one is called The Lessons in History. And it's about a book that talks about like what has always been true throughout history. And it's a book written like 40 years ago, but it is like super prescient. And there was a quote in there that this ties back to the episode we did about the regional marketing approach to Starbucks, which is why I want to call this back because you're going to feel excited about it. And the quote is essentially, the significance of regional nuance diminishes as technology increases.
Yes, 100%.
And it was like, this was written like 60 years ago. And what it means is he's talking about it in the sense of like, if you read Napoleon's biography, right? You read that recently, right? Like how much time did Napoleon spend like figuring out operations of moving people and things? Like that was like the majority of his time, right? Technology comes in and solves all of that.
Right.
And so like the borders get much bigger.
Right.
The applicability of how you solve problems get much bigger, which is why we're moving to kind of like a global by default. And we've said that a few times. I thought that was a cool quote that kind of leads us into that.
Right. Technology makes the world smaller and smaller. You know, we've seen AI with the translation tools. There was a guy I follow on Twitter. I know you know him, Nathan, who is in the AI space. Not to put his business out there, he did tweet about it, that he was getting married, I think, to a Japanese woman. And he speaks English and she speaks Japanese and they don't speak each other's language. And they are communicating through AI. That is incredible. Like AI is going to continue to make the world smaller, as in much more the same and less nuance for all of these different regions. And I think we're only going to see this continue to happen with AI, and we'll probably talk about it separately. OpenAI have not released, they have a voice cloning tool. Have you seen this?
I have.
Which is like very dangerous. I actually think this is one of the things where I'm a very pro, like, technology will find a home and we'll...
We don't need a lot of regulation. And then you're like, wait a second, maybe I was wrong.
Yeah. But again, you can basically talk in any language, talk like any person, you know, so I think the world becomes much smaller with technology.
I completely agree. Okay. Now getting to Claire's question for today's mailbag, which is, I'd love an episode or a response around how you can scale a one-person personality-driven business versus a larger operation. She's like, I think it'd be fascinating to see what Kip and Kieran think would be the differences in tackling the two. So like, if you were like, hey, I'm a founder, it's just me, I want to start scaling and building a personality-led business, how do I do it? What would you tell her?
Pick one platform, one point of differentiation, one topic that's related to the thing you sell, and try to excel at that.
Wow, that was so good and so clear.
I've told this story before about Gary Vee, who's coming on, where, you know, him and I had a debate about, like, he thinks you should do all the things from day one. And I just don't see how you can do all the things from day one. And I think about it like through myself, and I'm pretty time poor at the moment, but I love content. I love playing with AI. I try to do all these different things along with any kind of work I do. And I'm trying to master LinkedIn, right? Like I have to write content. Like I just have to, I've had to write content my entire career. Like I have to write something. So I have to put it somewhere. I don't know what you're trying to do right now with social, but I haven't tried to get back on and figure out X again. Like it's completely changed and
Yeah. That's
fine. There's nothing against X, but the kind of content it rewards is very different than it used to. And I can see that because I've cross-posted stuff that would have done well in X when it was Twitter and on LinkedIn, and performs much better on LinkedIn than X. So they're kind of differentiated now. And that means I have to learn how to create content on X that would actually start to perform really well again. It's a pretty time consuming thing to do. And so because these platforms are quite different in what works across those platforms, I think like pick the one nearest to your core audience. You have to pick something that you can differentiate on, have a clear perspective on, get a lot of engagement on. You know, the thing that most people make the mistake on is, okay, well, I can create content around this and that's working really well, but there's no real bridge to your product. Like there's no relevance to your product. And so those three things I think are the most important.
Well, first of all, I think that's great advice. Second of all, basically what you said is to have a personality-driven business, you have to have a personality.
You have to have a personality, it turns out.
It turns out that that's actually very
important. It's a hard thing. You can't fake. You actually have to have some perspective on things.
Yeah, you have to have real deep conviction. And that deep conviction can be loosely held. You can be open to changing your mind, but you have to have deep conviction to take this personality-driven approach. And, you know, there's my favorite James Dyson quote is different in everything, different for the sake of it, right? Like when you were telling somebody to be different, Kieran, like you were telling them to be capital D different.
Right.
Like not a little different, like as different as possible. And if you feel grossly uncomfortable, you are then probably different enough.
Yeah.
Right?
I've talked about it before, right? I don't try to relate content creation to being an entrepreneur. Like being an entrepreneur is a really tough life to lead. But there's like one thing that actually you have to experience in both of those things. Like content, you have to be okay with continually feeling like you're failing, right? Because you put something up and oh, like it's no one actually likes it, no one reads it. And that's a real public humiliation because I put it out there and people are like looking at my stuff and no one's even, and then you have to pick yourself up and go, okay, well, the next one, the next one, the next one, the next one. There's people I've met who are really successful now, multi-millionaires from their own personality-led businesses. It took them like 4 or 5 years of grinding to really start to like get traction on that content. And so you have to really kind of show up each and every time to get better, just that little bit better, like tiny little bit better, tiny little bit better. I've met very few people, maybe a couple who are just like out of the gate. They have something and it hits out of the gate.
Very rare.
And they're just like popular out of the gate.
You're saying you got to be ready for the grind.
Right.
You got to commit to it and do it.
It is a grind.
I would pick YouTube and I'd use a tool like Opus to cut shorts.
I don't think Opus and shorts cut it. If you want to win...
No, I'm saying you focus all your time on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I would distribute some shorts on YouTube and TikTok and Reels using Opus.
I got it.
You don't have a ton of money.
Yeah.
This is a solo operation to help promote my YouTube channel. Kieran, you want to hear something twisted though? Like you were just saying all this and I was just thinking, I was like, you know what? I'm glad we do the show and like, I'm glad we committed to doing it. And I was like, you know, worst case, if it doesn't ever get huge, huge, like at least there'll be enough content of me that like when I die, my son can build like a good model and like interact with me. And I'm like, what is wrong with me?
This is where we are. We want to put enough stuff out there so we can be models.
I think we have enough content now. We're like, build you can model. Make a nice like video AI model and like have conversations with me even if I wasn't here. And like, I think that's kind of nice.
Well, we have a Marketing Against the Grain bot that we are also going to give to listeners. I just wanted to play around with it and fine tune a little bit. Talking of personality, I want to like shoehorn this in here because I don't think we've talked about it on the show.
I love it when Kieran brings just a pet rock.
A little it's related.
Like, so I know this isn't really related, but I'm going to talk about it anyway right now.
I'm obsessed with this. I was obsessed with the first series. I'm obsessed with the second series.
Of what?
Have you ever watched The Physical 100?
No. What is it?
So it's like this Korean show. They take the 100 fittest people and they basically have these competitions. But the thing I want to call out is you should watch that and just see when we talk about personality, like their personalities. If the entire world acted like these people acted, the world would be a better place.
Okay. I did see you tweet this, I think.
They are so polite. They are so like... encouraging to competitors when they get put out by a competitor. They're like, you did so well. They always feel like they should have done better. They're like, oh, I failed. I could have done more. I could have supported my team more. It is like unbelievable how different it is from like the West and how that show would good. They should really create it for the West because what happened in the West is, I don't know if you watched Squid Games, where they replicated Squid Games on Netflix and did like the competition. And like within like the first episode, everyone had formed cliques and were trying to kill the other ones. Right? And then you watch this show in Korea and like everyone is like encouraging each other, complimenting each other. I just thought it's an incredible show. It was such a breath of fresh air in terms of personalities. Like, so if people want to see the positive side of the world a little bit more, that's, I think, a good reflection of it.
First of all, I love that you just found a way to just shoehorn in your favorite show that you watch right now. I love it. There's no real transition from that, but I do want to go on to question four. Question four comes to us from Yusman Yusof. And he was like, how can you keep yourself motivated in starting? As I know it takes time for anything to get noticed, whether it's X or Instagram or YouTube or TikTok, everything takes time. But during the first like 6 months, I feel like giving up. How can I stay motivated?
Enjoy the process. I think that is the number one thing you have to do. Like,
yeah, if you're even thinking about the first 6 months, you've already lost the game.
Yeah. I think with these things, you have to like doing it.
You do.
You have to be kind of obsessed by it. You can have a career in this space. Like I've met people in this space who are like in digital and do things and they're fine. They're like, you know, average, and average is fine. You'll make an okay living being average, but they're average because they're not obsessed, right? And that's fine. They're probably prioritizing other things. And I would never say that like that's not the life for them. But if you want to be truly great, you have to have like a weird obsession. You have to like just have care, like be so curious about every detail of how these things work. And you have to enjoy the process.
But it's not just obsession. I know a lot of people who are obsessed with consumption, right? Like they love movies, they love playing games, whatever. You have to be obsessed with making stuff.
But how things work, how it all works. Like, oh, like I did this thing and this got better. I did this thing and this didn't get better. Like the curiosity of like why some things work and other things don't work.
Well, how it works. And you have to be to a point where you're like, I have an idea and I can't wait to get it out.
Right.
You know, like there are times I'll just like Slack Kieran and producer Darren and be like, we got to record.
Right.
Right. Like we have to talk about this thing. Like I have so much I want to talk about, right? And you feel like yourself vibrating because like you have to get it out. And if that's not how you feel, you're not going to be good.
This is why I decided not to be a software developer anymore, because I knew I was going to be an average software developer. Like I spent a couple of years, I read books, I coded, I built some things. And I was like, boy, my life is going to be
super average. Boring life.
It's going to be a long average, like just showing up and being average, because it just didn't click with me. It wasn't resonating. It didn't get me fired up. What fired me up is like the idea, and then the thing was built, and then like, oh, how can I actually get people to use this? But the actual building of it just didn't get me fired up. And so I think you have to, in that first 6 months, if you're, to your point, thinking, how do I get through this first 6 months? that's the wrong thing. If your question is, how do I convince my manager or boss or founder to continue to keep going, like the first 6 months, you're not going to see much traction. That's just your ability to build conviction around your ideas. You know, everybody has their own personal brand. And a lot of times when we talk about that, we think about the external brand. A lot of your success is dependent upon your personal brand internally within the company and how much like trust people give you in the conviction and ideas you have.
And by the way, in 6 months, you should have some growth. Like you will start at zero. You won't be very big in 6 months, but you'll have something more than zero.
Right. On places like TikTok, you could have significant growth.
Yeah. And if you don't have any real audience in 6 months, then you're just bad at it.
I'll tell you a fun story. Actually, over the weekend, we had visitors come over, a couple of friends, and I had this.
Oh, yeah. You're in that stage of life where everybody wants to come see the baby.
Everyone's coming over to see Hope.
The baby's just now getting old enough where everybody can come visit.
Everyone's coming, bringing gifts, being very kind. And I actually look into this because I know it's meant to be a great marketing story, the Stanley Cup, right?
How you don't understand this market, it's going to blow your mind.
I know. I need to look into it. I saw Elena posting about it the weekend, so I'm going to actually dig into it.
Do you know the guy who's the CEO of Stanley who made it take off? Do you know what he did before?
I don't know anything about it. I have to admit, I haven't even looked into the story.
This will make you want to go look it up. The guy who's the CEO of Stanley, who took this like old thermos brand and made it this amazing consumer goods company, was previously the chief marketing officer at Crocs.
Oh.
So he is 2 for 2
Dope.
On taking things that have no business of being hugely popular.
What a legend.
And making them hugely popular. He is for sure in the marketing hall of fame. He may be getting closer to the marketing Mount Rushmore if we are going to update our marketing Mount Rushmore.
Like, except there with
the
Red Bull.
He's at least in the conversation of you're like, oh, we got to at least talk about him a little bit to be up there. So
I will go with my AI weapons and break all this down
do
pretty
the deep
fast.
Dive, and then you're going to message me and then we're going to end up doing a whole show and it'll be great.
So basically they said, hey, like, I didn't know you were a 14-year-old girl. Like, has he managed to make this like really popular?
I think the primary demographic is 14 to 24 year old women. Yes.
Awesome. Great. I feel young. Cool.
Just to let you know on the Stanley side of things, at least in the US, I'd say it might be different internationally. Let's do one more question.
We'll do two because I can answer one of them very fast.
Go.
This is like Prime from Evilio Matos, who basically wants to know, I really do like this.
Let's go.
So they put in a prompt, and the reason they put in the prompt, because they were like, can anyone test this? I want to see if it gives different results, right? So here's the thing. One of the things that I'm working on for our listeners, because you all are going to be in the 5%, not the 95% that gets automated away with marketing, is I've talked about it, have a free email course. Set the world alight, but it's a free email course with a custom GPT to help you do homework assignments. And it's all done through AI. And then I'll talk through how I did it at the end of the 7-day course. And so I built the custom GPT. It's the longest one I've built. So like it's 8,000 characters, and then it's like lots of documentation. And the reason I'll just talk about it is because it is not consistent, right? So like I have like a menu of options and you can click one and do your homework assignment. And each time you click it, sometimes it will give you like these kind of dramatically different responses for some reason. And so you have to continue to refine the prompt to make it really strict and let it know that it shouldn't deviate away from what you've asked. So for Evilio, you probably will find for this prompt, because I looked at your prompt, it's really broad. Like there's no restrictions around what the ChatGPT can give you back. It will give you different answers. If me and Kip did it, it would give different answers. And then the only other one I'll quickly answer for someone is there's one here from Sarah Hincapie, who basically is asking, hey, I work in a freight forwarder, highly competitive marketer, and she wants to basically know what subject line she should choose for an email. So obviously we don't know what email it is. Hey, here's the thing, use AI. Like this is like the entire reason I would basically go to Claude and I would say, hey, here's the email campaign, here's the buyer, here's the purpose of the email, create me 50 different variations of a subject line. And then I would go and do the same thing in Gemini and ChatGPT, and I would pick the best headlines.
And then you test the best headlines to see which one.
I'd split test them, right? This is it, like these are the use cases. If you are a marketer and you are doing this yourself, you're like ripe for disruption between marketers who are doing this with AI. And I would say, Sarah, the free email course is coming, teaches people some of the timeless principles from the past 100 years. And three of them are around call to actions from people like David Ogilvy, Gary Hilbert, like some of the incredible copywriters of our time. So make sure you sign up for the course when it comes out.
Look at Kieran. Are you plugging a course he's working on? I'm so excited and proud of that. Soon, there's just going to be an episode that's just going to be a 20-minute loop of Kieran saying, use AI. Use AI.
Use AI.
Use AI.
I can't stress enough how deep I am into AI and how much better I am as a knowledge worker.
Hold on. We got like a couple minutes before we close out here. How much better are you? Because I mean, I'm in it too. What's your estimation?
I would say that I'm like 30, 40% more productive.
I was going to say 20 to 30%. So yeah, that seems right.
Yeah.
You're better than me.
I rarely do anything without using AI in some way. I don't use search anymore. I do AI for most first passes of things.
When's the last time you Googled something?
Did I Google something recently? What I do actually, which is really interesting because it does speak to what we talked about 18 months ago. You know, when I use Google is to check what the AI is giving me back.
Yeah, the accuracy.
So I do extra validation. And that's fine because I'm like, oh, I wouldn't have thought of these things. And I can just Google to make sure if they're right or wrong.
But you're using it as a verification tool, not a discovery tool.
Yeah, like one of the things, I did some really cool prep work for Sophia, who's coming on from Nasty Gal, because we're excited to have her on the show. And I was getting some really cool quotes from her because she said a lot of great things about building the brand. She built one of the best fashion brands on e-com. And she had a great quote. And I was like, okay, I think the average person would just take the quote and say, hey, Sophia, this quote was great. Did you say this thing? She probably won't remember because, you know, she's given a lot of interviews, yeah. But I double checked and she didn't say those words. And so like, you have to like really check. I think you want to have an extra air of caution because the thing people don't realize is ChatGPT isn't a search engine. It's meant to be creative. And so it will creatively answer things, right? Like this is the entire reason I was saying the prompt will deliver different results each and every time because there's creativity in the answer it's giving you. And that's why you have to put some real restrictions around it. So the way you could restrict it on quotes is say, only give me the ones where there's a source cited, right? So you have to like start to figure out how to build in these restrictions.
Okay. We didn't have time to get to the entire mailbag of questions today, but we got to a bunch. And I think we covered some great ground. We gave some advice, especially for the small teams, solo teams out there. We've been hearing a bunch of feedback that we wanted some there. So I feel good that we got there. Kieran, we've talked about quotes. We talked about how to use AI more. Kieran plugged the upcoming email course. We have covered a ton of ground today. And leave us a comment, send us a message on connect.com if you like the Q&A show format. If so, we'll do more of them. We're going to test this out. We'll see you real soon on Marketing Against the Grain.